Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Chassis.com is releasing King of the Underdogs, the story of John Avildsen, who directed the epic underdog films Rocky, The Karate Kid, Lean on Me, and The Power of One. The documentary features Sylvester Stallone, Martin Scorsese, Ralph Macchio, Morgan Freeman, and the cast of each movie. Pick up your copy at chassis.com today. Saturday, August 5th at the Irvine Improv. Don't miss the Podcasting Masterclass with Adam Carolla.
Find out how I started my podcast and turned it into a media empire by attending my Podcasting Masterclass at the Irvine Improv, 10 a.m., August 5th. I'll be joined by the team at Podcast One, the largest podcast network in the world, including my friends, billionaire Norm Pattiz and CEO Jim Burke. This six-hour course will unlock the secrets to get you started and grow your very own show from the ground up.
Plus, Bald Brian, Gina Grad, and Dawson from the show will be there. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the comedian with a new special called The Immigrant, Maz Gibrani. With Gina Grant on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a round of blah, blah, blog. And now, not gentle, but definitely a man, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on Monday. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian. All right, Adam. Yeah, come on. Here's what we do. We just do this.
So you get yourself psyched up before you talk to Congress.
Pep talk.
Now, there's a funny, funny piece of wiring, which is I told you I have a couple things coming on. One is what I'm doing today. Or about this time as you listen to this, which is going up to the racetrack at Sonoma and driving a couple of race cars. It's all the stuff I've been preparing for.
The Paul Newman race cars.
Well, yeah, there's two race cars. There's the Paul Newman Trans Am car, which ran in the Trans Am series, which is not a Trans Am.
Okay.
Like Smokey the Bandit kind of thing. There's a series called Trans Am that accommodates many different makes and models of cars. I am there as part of Jay Leno's garage to get in that car and drive that car there. Not a great track for me. Pretty technical. Driven on a couple times.
What does that mean?
The technical part?
Yeah. I mean, what makes it different?
They're tracks like the last track I drove at, which is Willow Springs, which everyone would say very fast track, but not technical, just fast. So that's a kind of presents its own problems, which is, well, now you got to have balls to drive there because it's fast, but not that technical.
Okay.
Then the technical ones are lots of turns, lots of hills you don't see over, lots of setting up for lots of different stuff. I mean, the difference is... I believe Sonoma's 2.5 miles. And I also believe that Willow Springs is 2.5 miles. And the average lap time at Sonoma, you know, the guy who was sitting on the pole of my race at Willow Springs did a 1:18 lap. And so 2.5 mile track it in 1:18. If you do a 1:40 something at Sonoma, same size track, you're flying.
Okay.
But like a full 25 seconds a lap slower. And that is a huge difference in terms of your average speed. So if you're doing Willow Springs, your average 100, you know, a minute 20 a lap, that's fine. If you did a minute 40 or a minute 45, you'd be crawling. You'd be considered, okay. You wouldn't even be in the race.
And if you're waiting,
you'd be broken down.
Right. And if you're waiting for the second car to get there for 25 seconds, it would feel like an eternity.
The first car would lap the second car in the first three laps and then continuously lap the other car, like every 2.5 or 3 laps. Like, it would be insane how much. If you're 5 seconds off of the pace, you're not even in the race. 25 seconds would not be like driving a stock Miata or something like that. But this track is technical, so it's a lot slower, but there's a lot more turns and a lot more stuff. So there's that to look forward to. But there's also the 935 Porsche Newman Le Mans car, which is going there as well to be shaken out, as they say. Yeah. So I'm interested. Now, that's a completely different animal because it's got an engine in the rear and drives completely differently, and I've never driven one before. So that's a car that I'll go around the track in, and a guy who's a professional 935 driver, and then he will show me how to drive that car, and then I will go shake that car out as well. We just have to figure out what kind of passenger I am. I think I'm good, because I said I ride with Mike August.
So I know you've crazy speeds and dangerous turns.
Yeah.
I'm always relaxed for the impact, because you won't break as many bones. So I am completely and utterly preoccupied with getting to Sonoma and shaking both these cars out.
As long as that stupid Congress thing's out of the way now.
Yeah. And then there's another part of me that has the ego. It's like, I don't want to be way off of Newman's time in his car, but I'm not going to be that close because the car's not really going to be set up like it would be. Like, if you're doing a race, you'd have the gearing would be set up for the specific track, the tire compound.
It'd be in mid-season form.
And the car, you would show up with a semi-truck filled with tires with different compounds and different gears and ratios and things like that. And then you would dial that car into that track and you would practice and you dial it in a little more, and you'd come back in, you dial it in a little more. And that's how you do it. I'm just going to throw it out there cold. This is the one that came from England. I'm just going to jump in and drive it. The only factor is you have to sort of weigh your ego against a concrete wall. Like, you want to go fast, you want to be impressive, you want to do well, but then there's the wall. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to hit the wall.
Great equalizer.
It is. So there's that thing of like, how close to the potential of this car do I want to drive it? It's going to be on Leno's garage. You don't want to show up and be, oh man, is he slow? Or is this embarrassing? Or it's not even close, or whatever it is, versus the wall. So we'll figure that out.
Oh, go ahead.
No, what did you want to say?
I was going to say, we spent yesterday talking a lot about the equipment and the prep and the flying out. Are you flying Leno's private jet?
Yeah, I get in there.
Tell me you get in their private jet.
Yep. Yeah. Now, here's the deal. Could have flown private both ways, but in order to get some seat time in the 935, got to fly in earlier. Okay. To meet the 935 Porsche and then Leno at the end of the day. So flying in Southwest and then flying out with Leno.
Rich man, poor man.
at the end of the day.
That's a nice little carrot to be dangling for the end, for the return trip home.
Yeah, but wouldn't you, like going to D.C., wouldn't you rather be more comfortable going into this lion's den?
Yeah, I probably would. But, It's such a short flight. It's one of these things, and it's why everybody You have to think like me. Everybody needs to think like me. So you have these conversations, started with Porcelain Punisher, the man who pursues pleasure. Matt, the Porcelain Punisher, Fondelier. Seeker of pleasure. Seeker of pleasure. Punisher of porcelain. Matt Fondelier. Say to him,
boom,
I want to fly into Sonoma. How's that work? Nothing from Burbank.
I was going
to
say.
To Sonoma. There's an LAX.
There's an LAX, and it's quite convenient.
And it's like, I think it was even a prop plane or something.
It's small. Back. I just did it for a funeral a few months ago, and while convenient, it is a small plane. It's like one of those like one row, two rows.
Right. So you got to do that. And I for some reason remember a prop, but that's when me and Jimmy flew out there for my 50th birthday with a few other people, and it was fun and all that kind of stuff. But you fly into Sonoma. It's a little airport.
It is a prop plane.
It's a prop plane.
And at least the first one I pulled up was.
How long is that flight?
And then it's 1 hour and 35 minutes, LAX to, it's called Santa Rosa.
Then it makes
Charles Schultz.
Yes,
your
that's
favorite.
What makes me angry. So I don't like that. All right. So
I don't like that.
So, Gary, you're going to do some math here, but. So now you go, I have to meet my car. My car gets loaded up on a trailer and gets taken out there from here. I have to go meet the car with all my equipment. I'll throw all my equipment in the truck, but I have to meet my car at Sonoma. Now, how do I do that? I don't really want to drive to LAX. And by the way, to get with the 935 and to do all that, to get to LAX to have a flight that leaves like 9 or 9:30 in the morning, that's a total disaster.
You're screwed.
Right? Okay. So, Matt, Porcelain Punisher, Seeker of Pleasure, what shall we do? Well, there's a couple of flights. They leave out of LAX, and they fly to the Sonoma Airport. Okay. And nothing out of Burbank. No. No Southwest anything. No. Okay. How long from the Sonoma Airport to the raceway? Sonoma Racetrack.
Gotta imagine it's pretty close.
Infineon Racetrack. Gary will look it up. Now you get a surprising answer. 50 minutes or something like that.
That is surprising.
I was like, it's that far away from the airport, huh? Well, Waze says it's going to be 48 minutes or something like that. I'll paraphrase or fudge my numbers here. Okay.
47 minutes.
47 minutes. All right. Wait a minute.
38.0 miles.
All right.
Sorry.
So the track, the Sonoma track and the Sonoma airport are not very close together. All right.
Okay.
Now, let's do this math. What if I flew into Oakland?
Yeah, which direction 38 miles? Because that makes a huge difference.
How far? Well, I don't.
Towards Oakland, or that's what I'm saying. Is it towards Oakland or is it towards more Sonoma?
Well, Oakland's going to be towards Sonoma.
Do you want the answer or are you building? I'm sorry.
I'm building.
No, the question I was asking, which direction from the airport is the racetrack? Are you heading farther away from Oakland or heading towards Oakland? Because that would mitigate a
drive.
It's
a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. But all I know is I say to Matt, how far from Oakland or any of the airports around there? I don't know. San Jose?
SFO.
SFO. How far from Oakland to the track? He says 52 minutes or something of that nature. Go ahead.
I got 55.
55 minutes. Now, we're separated by 7 minutes.
There is a 10-mile difference.
I was going to say.
But we're still separated by 7 minutes. And there's a flight every hour going from Burbank to Oakland.
Yahtzee.
Completely solved my problem.
Yeah.
But never would have gotten there if I didn't use my brain, my crystal brain, and start exploring. Because most people, I think, would just stop and go, I guess we'll have to just suck it up and fly into. Also, you fly in a prop plane. Gary, got to check this. Your prop plane flight from LAX to Sonoma at 134, 137, or whatever it is got to be slower than a jet. Going
I would imagine
into
so,
Oakland, which might be 58 minutes or something. So now you're killing a half hour in the air with the old crop duster there. So now we've solved the problem. And again, you have to ask questions because I don't know the lay of the land. It seems bizarre to me that Sonoma Airport is 50 minutes from Sonoma Raceway, and so is the Oakland Airport, but point some of it's traffic.
Point of information, Sonoma is Sonoma County, so it could be Sonoma County Airport, Sonoma County Raceway. There's a city of Sonoma and the county.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The airport is actually called Santa Rosa Airport.
That is at the southern end of Sonoma.
Right. And the flight to Oakland from Burbank saves you 25 minutes in the air.
Wow.
1 hour and 10 minutes versus 135.
Right. So now I'm coming out ahead when you deduct the 7, mm-hmm. or you add the 7, then the deduct the 25 or whatever, and I get to leave from Burbank and all that good mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
Take a real plane.
Save 3 hours.
So I think we're flying back, probably land in Van Nuys, as Jay's apt to do. Last time I did that with him, it was during Carmageddon, when they were closing like the 405
yes.
freeway.
I forgot about that.
And he drove me home in one of the first Fiats they ever delivered. At like
powered by steam.
He drove me home at like 4 in the morning in a Fiat.
Adam, I'll drive. You shovel the coal.
Jimmy, 45, Idaho.
Hey, what's up, guys? Great show as always.
What's going on?
Hey, a lot's going on. And, man, I'm so happy for what you know you just did and addressing our government the way you did it and your style. And you make a lot of sense, man. And I hope that people will open their ears and listen to, you know, guys like you. And I told your screener, I think it's a Corolla Carlson ticket for 2020. What do you say?
I couldn't imagine running for anything because it's insane. But maybe it's gotten so insane that you just get to go, yeah, I made jokes about this. I said that. I did everything else. So what? Like, yeah. Everyone's just, it's all on now.
Table.
It's like,
Kid Rock can do it.
Yeah, it's like, it's my sort of, it's my Kardashian thing. Like, yeah, there's me having sex on the internet all over the place. So what?
No.
I'm going to endorse Coca-Cola. Like, it's just, I don't think it matters. Like, we've gone so far that it just doesn't, it doesn't really matter anymore.
There's no bad publicity anymore.
Yeah,
It doesn't. And it's like the days of Ronald Reagan, you know, people said, oh, he could never do it. And he was one of our very best. And I know you've knocked yourself a lot and you put yourself down. And sometimes when I call, I love to tease you and stuff. Just, you know, it's out of respect and love. You got it, dude. You totally get it. And
thanks. One of the things I said, which I stand by, is at a certain, it was about hour 3 when everyone's just pontificating about what we're going to do to college students. I just said, look, half the country doesn't go to college. So you guys don't get to get your hands on everybody. You know, when you're sitting next to all these people with all their titles, everybody in that the room I was in was just talking about when 100% of the population ends up in college, mm-hmm. how are we going to reprogram them into not being haters?
Well, they're very insular. Think about 100% of the people under that roof, you know,
have
normally,
only been in that system.
Except for you, went to college.
Right. So I had to explain to them, since you're going to let at least half the population of this country, you're not going to be able to get to them with every messages because they're going to work at their dad's unfinished furniture plant or what have you, at the Burger King or wherever.
The coal mine.
They're not going to be there. How are we going to get this message to half the population or more that's not going to be there to hear your super confusing, by the way, no duh message anyway. I think the parents need to start stepping up and making little citizens, little good citizens that says, hey, you probably shouldn't be filled with hate and vitriol.
Lesson one.
For everybody who looks different than you. And they can talk this like different than you thing into the ground. Like one of their biggest things. The other reason they're not going to solve any problems whatsoever.
Well, you know, there's.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. And another great thing that you bring to the table is your life that you lived as a kid and as a teenager and then as a young adult, and even into your, you know, you were sort of a late bloomer, but you never took on the role of the victim, and you never took on the role of, you know, I had family members like your mom that wanted to do nothing and sit on the couch and get everything for free. And I remember looking at them just like you going, that looks miserable. And you could have easily took that role, but you didn't. You used it as motivation and you used it to push you. And you get that. And the other thing you get, Corolla, is that not everybody's supposed to go to freaking college, you know?
I agree. I like all the successful.
What are you talking about?
All the successful people I know did some little, like, went to college drunk tank for like a weekend and then left and then went and started their own business or whatever it is. But, okay. So the question.
Keep up the good work.
Right. You want to ask me about Sonoma?
Sonoma. Yeah. Yeah. You know, can I tell a real quick Paul Newman story that I think's awesome?
Okay.
You might not know.
All right.
Do you remember the time he got in a pretty good wreck, car caught on fire, if I remember right, and the camera crews came running out, and he told the camera folks, he says, don't you dare broadcast any of this until I talk to the wife first.
Oh, really?
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, great story. And he said, until I can call my wife and tell her I'm okay, don't you dare start broadcasting this stuff. And I thought, what a class act, you know, and what a smart, forward-thinking guy.
Great story.
Yeah, and speaking of that, your 24-hour war is amazing. But the thing I wanted to ask you about Sonoma is, when is it? And I think my son and I want to come out and check it out. Is it open to the public?
It just happened. He did great.
I did great. Yeah, you'd have.
Oh, it's over.
You'd have to. Yeah, you'd have to. No, we're taping this in advance. But as I record this, you'd have to get out there tomorrow. So you're in Idaho, so you'd have to hustle.
Yeah, I'd have to hustle. How many seconds off of his best time were you?
I did not do it yet. I have looked at some times on that track. He's fast. That car's fast. He drove that car fast. So, and I'm not good on that track. So I don't know. I'm hoping for maybe a 5 second gap or something of that nature. I don't know. I don't know why it's that important. It shouldn't be that important. I should just honor his memory by not coming that close to whatever times he did. Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath. Emmy-nominated groundbreaking doc series, Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath, returns for season 2 on August 5th. 10 all new episodes. Leah and her high-level former Scientology executives and members delve into shocking stories of abuse, harassment, and heartbreak. We loved it the first season. Now we're going back for season 2. This season, Lee continues her quest to give a voice to the victims of the Church of Scientology, helping people take action, turning survivors into fighters, revealing truths, and seeking justice. You can watch the first season online. I watch it. I suggest you do the same.
Riveting.
First season online, on demand, and the A&E app, if you like. But it's coming back. Season 2, August 15th, 10 all new episodes, everybody. Leah Remini, Scientology, and the Aftermath. All right, let's see. He's got a question about Jimmy Pilots. Yes, Wade, 53, Agoura Hills. Wade?
Hey, it's Gina Bryant. Get it on?
Yeah, man.
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just want to preface this first by saying that as an airline pilot, anything that associates alcoholism and the piloting profession is kind of bad, bad, bad. But I got to say that when you and Jimmy were on the Man Show and you impersonated two pilots in, I guess it was LAX, and you were drinking at bars and just getting hammered. I mean, my buddies and I, we passed this video back and forth, and it's just gut-splittingly funny. And I got to say, you know, I wonder, first of all, how drunk were you guys? Was a lot of that just acting, or were you just as hammered as can be? Because at the end, Jimmy is just passed out in a flower bed. And there's got to be more stories about it.
Well, it starts like, you know, it's like Snoop Dogg. Like, you know, you go, we're going to go to his house. We're going to pretend to smoke weed. And then some point you go, maybe we should just smoke weed. And then it kind of turns into...
You started off the day acting.
Into something else. So it was kind of like that. Like, we start off like, we'll have some beers and see what happens. And then we start... I had to go to hustle to get the Loveline that night to work. And I flew out of there at like 9:45 to get to Culver City. It was just like 15 minutes away at the time to get there. Yeah, we had a good buzz going. We were just started drinking beer. I don't I can't give you a number, but I can tell you it was not near beer we were drinking. Obviously, the joke was how drunk we were, and in order to make people around us think we were plastered.
So you had beers in your hand or cocktails, whatever it was.
What I'm saying is you go to a party, you go to a bar, you have some cocktails, you have some drinks, and you catch a buzz. But if you're intentionally trying to make tables next to you think you're drunk, you could go further. We were acting in that we can both hold our beer pretty good, so you wouldn't have known it. But so the answer is yes to both. We were acting drunk and we were getting drunk.
Mm-hmm. The porn stars aren't in love with each other, but
they always climax though for real.
Pulling it off.
Once in a while there are couples, but I don't approve.
They're pretty rare. Can I tell you why that man show bit upsets me?
Hmm.
It's not because of that. Because years later, when what was that show? What Would You Do? That very self-serious show where you're undercover with the camera. What would you do? And someone starts being racist to a waiter or whatever. They did your bit. They sent the guy as a drunk pilot to the airport, and they started recording him, and they never acknowledged it. It's like, okay, just say this was played for laughs many years ago about the man show, but we just say that. Don't just show up and be like, here's an idea we had. That's not an idea you had. This was on TV 7 years ago.
I know. It's actually funnier or makes more sense if they go,
what would you do?
But what if they really did it without a joke, you know? I know, but that show is so insane because there's like some guy built like Suge Knight, and he's yelling at his five-year-old son at the park. It's like, why didn't you stand up? Yeah. Why didn't you walk over there?
Why didn't you
poke him in the chest and tell him that no child deserves to be? You know, like, are you kidding?
What am I supposed to do? They had the one with the ugly Americans where they were like in Paris and they were dressed like head to toe in like stars and stripes and hey, where do I get some of that Bordeaux? It's like, what would you do in this? What am I supposed to do?
I know. That's why.
Beat him with a baguette?
Yes. It's my Billy Bush syndrome. Which is, if you're interviewing some big blustery guy like Trump, and he starts talking about chicks and grabbing them in the snatch and stuff, you just laugh. We're coming up on the set, so it's getting hair and makeup. Like, this notion that whether it's what would you do or what would Billy Bush do, that you're going to stop and go, excuse me, I'm married to a lovely woman.
That is an attack
of 9 years
on my mother and every
and
woman.
Whether this
after.
Is some sort of joke or hyperbole, I don't know, but I don't care for it. Like, is that really? I don't know anyone. I don't know anyone who would have that conversation. Your thing is, give a laugh. You laugh them. Give that sort of, right, brother. And then just get on to the next
Billy Bush
thing.
Suffered so much worse shrapnel from that than Trump ever did.
Yes, one of them became president.
Yes, and one of them lost their job.
Yep.
Not for encouraging or even instigating, just sort of going,
he's a doofus, but he's not a, whatever.
I really, who amongst us wouldn't have just kept going?
Mm-hmm. Sir, this conversation goes no further until you apologize.
Gina, maybe among us,
All right.
Can I say one thing real quick? Correct myself from earlier.
Yes.
Santa Rosa, I looked up, not at the southern tip of Sonoma County, actually quite square in the middle.
Oh, all right.
Well, I said
will you be able
thing.
To sleep tonight?
I should. I'm from the Bay Area.
I suppose some of it has to do with traffic, too. Like you were talking about the direction.
Yeah, the raceway is almost totally between Oakland and...
Sonoma's dead call. North and Oakland's pretty much dead nuts south.
Okay.
That's a good call.
All right. Thank you, pilot person. Let's see. So this... And Maz Jobrani's out there, so we'll bring him in. Do we need to break on this show, Gary? Andy Albuquerque.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call, Adam.
Sure.
Paul, Gina, love what you do. Great. First of all, I just wanted to tell you how impressed I was with your address to Congress. Thank you for saying what you did. And you made all of us that listen to the show religiously very, very proud. So, I hope you're proud of yourself.
I base it solely on other people's reaction. I don't have any pride about anything, but the people seem to enjoy it and were positive about it. Now I feel good about myself.
One of the things that you said that really stood out, and I hope that you run with it a little bit more, was children are the future and adults are the past, or adults are the present.
Mm-hmm.
And was that something you came up with just right then off the cuff, or was that something
technically Whitney Houston came up with?
No, it's bothered me. It's always kind of bothered me that we're always like, they're our future, they're our future, they're our future. And it's like, and also with the, you can learn a lot from your 7-year-old, like about what? So, no, I've always kind of had that thought, but I didn't get to the second part. Like, okay, kids of the future, kids of the future, kids of the future. And it just struck me a couple days before I went, but we're the present. And we need to act like adults in the present so that they can have a good future. And it sort of hit me. So, no, it didn't just pop out. It sort of popped into my head when I was walking my dog. But sorry.
I hope it had the right effect. And it definitely struck a chord with me. So thank you very much. And keep up the work and keep up the pirate ship.
Thanks, Andy. Love the support. And if you want to support, how about you go to Geico, man? Everybody's got the to-do list, man. You got to drop off the dry cleaning. You have to address Congress. You got to pick up some milk. How about you save hundreds of dollars to your car insurance without even leaving the house? Just go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. A little extra money in your pocket. Nothing better than that, ladies and gentlemen. Geico. Spend a few minutes and see just how much you could save on your car insurance. All right, names. Let's see. Michael wants to submit two names to the list of people who would hate having sex with me. Again, the way I'm wired with my self-esteem, I don't fantasize about those I'd like to have sex with. I fantasize about those who would be most disgusted. It's like with oral. I don't give oral. I don't give good oral. I don't claim even have any skill at it. But receiving, nobody receives better than me. Michael, 26, Illinois.
What's going on? Getting on.
What's going on, man?
Not much. Just mowing some road ditches and bored. Got to thinking. On last week's show, I believe, you had David Wilde on.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned being on a plane from New York to L.A., and Jessica Chastain was the first name I'll submit for your consideration to that list.
Of people who would be disgusted. Yeah, I feel like she'd be very disgusted.
She'd be horrified.
Anybody who takes their craft very seriously.
Yeah.
Like an actress who takes a very serious approach to her craft.
And I think she's a vegan, which somehow I think factors in.
Yeah, because I'd probably have like a weird meat ooze. You know, because there's two smells.
You got that meat-eating vibe.
There's, you know, running on a treadmill smell, and then there's sex smell. Mm-hmm. And they both make you sweat because of the movement, but one's different. Very different. Yeah. And who's the other?
All right. The other name, and maybe you've covered this one before, but I saw Alice Eve.
She's
familiar
stunner.
With her.
Where do we know her from?
She's British, right? I've only seen her in
Star Trek.
She was in the most recent Star Trek movie, and
she was in Black Mirror. She's great in the episode with Bryce Dallas Howard.
Her Men in Black 3.
I think her first like hit movie in America was She's Out of Your League. She was the one who was out of your league.
Oh. What?
Yeah, now we can't solely base this on aesthetics, because I've found that there's English people that sometimes have a little better sense of humor and don't take themselves as whatever. But
she studied at Oxford.
She might want to go slumming.
She studied at Oxford.
Ace.
Not good.
She's the one who married Vinny Chase in Entourage.
Uh-huh.
The British reporter.
Right.
Who he falls in love with at the very end of the series.
Right. All right. Let's find out more about her. Oxnard. You say she studied in Oxnard?
Right up the street. We have a lot in common.
Good fishing out there up the pier, man.
Onion fields.
We just played Oxnard.
All right. I need to find out more.
Parents are both actors. They moved to L.A. from England where she was born so her father could pursue the craft.
She was
13 when they moved.
Do some research.
Get rid of this picture of her looking amazing, by the way.
MrSkin.com. Find out a little more about her.
Yeah, we got to look into it, but I'm with you. I mean, I think we got a lock here.
And I think she's on my list also. So
with that. Okay. Well, hold on. We haven't asked Alice Eve if she'll have sex with 26-year-old Michael from Illinois.
Yeah.
Who's digging road ditches. Is that what you're doing, Michael?
Yeah. You know, it'd mean a lot, but I just don't see it happening. So unless she's looking for a guy who smells like hogs and driving a tractor.
Yeah, I'm not counting on it. I'm not counting on it happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe a fundraiser kind of thing.
But. Oh, yeah. Like
make a wish.
Booth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you never say never.
That's right.
except for you to set it twice. All right. Thanks, Michael. If anyone else would like to contribute or tweet me people that would they know would be disgusted having sex with me, I'm all ears. I love it. And Jessica Chastain is a
runner.
Perfect example, because it's a combination. It's not just all about your looks. It's a little bit about your posture and about your
aura,
approach
your
and your aura and your air. Yeah, I feel. Oh, what's the redhead from Boogie Nights?
Julianne Moore.
Oh, it wasn't Julianne Moore. It was the other redhead. It was the next Julianne Moore who came.
Heather Graham.
No, she. I think of her as blonde.
We're still talking about Boogie Nights.
Oh, sorry. That one's on me. Oh, what's her name from Arrival?
Ari Parker?
Oh, no. Bryce Dallas Howard. No, no. I know who you're talking. Amy Adams.
Yes.
Yeah, Amy Adams. She gave an Oscar speech and explained that her three-year-old son or daughter taught her about courage. And I realized now she's
she
on.
She rolls up your list instantly.
She rocketed up to the top of the list.
It's like one of those like, hammer things at the fair, like ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. I don't know why. I was just watching. I guess everyone else was just enjoying her speech. I was like, oh, baby, you just leapfrogged. Like,
with a bullet.
Yeah, it was like one of those, like they have those MMA rankings where like the number 10 guy knocks the number 2 guy out cold and they don't jump up one spot. You jump you up like up, 6-7 spots when you do that.
You know, I don't know if we've ever submitted this one for this particular list. Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yeah, there's a whole demo. That's,
I could get an urban list going if that's if that's smart. But also, I feel like there's a part of her that's a little crazy too.
True. She'd do anything for a thrill.
Oh, here she is. Oh. I think she's thanking.
And most of all, you cannot play me out of talking about my daughter. My daughter, Aviana, who's not old enough to understand this. But
Aviana.
I love you so much. Thank you for teaching me to accept joy and to let go of fear. Thank you so, so much.
Taught her to let go of fear.
Well, she accepts fear. Maybe she'll be with you.
Golden Globes. All right. So, I would tell her, Aviana's got to teach her how to let go of pride. And welcome and dignity. That would be my last words before I mounted her. Is Aviana around? Turn the miniature chair around. You're not going to see what happens to mommy. All right, so go ahead and tweet me. I think we should put together a nice big power list.
We should have a little list going.
We should have a top 10 of women that would be most disgusted having sex with me. And then,
it's in flux. If there's a new entry, then someone's got to go.
And again, when one announces that she has decided to no longer go with he or she as a label or decides that she's going to march with ISIS or whether she's going to denounce heterosexuality as an aggressive attack on the human form.
Sure.
She may jump up.
Yeah.
Okay.
A few spots.
Yep.
Yes, Gary.
May I suggest we use the hashtag #DisgustSex just to make it easier to cull through all these?
DISGUST, yes.
Yeah. It's going to feel like we're talking about sex, though. Mm. Can we come up with something better than disgust sex?
Because it's a homonym for disgust, like thing we discuss.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to check
out. I don't
know.
I see. Let's make it easier. We'll figure it out.
Hate sex.
Disgusted with Adam.
All right. Let's go.
Look at that drop.
Whatever you like. Let's see. Bryce, 31, Virginia. Mm-hmm.
Bryce?
No good.
All right, that's fine. Do the last. So, Gary, did you say we're taking a break or not? All right.
Don't need to if you don't want
to. Why don't you bring in Maz?
You got it.
Hey, Matt, 31, Maryland.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing, man?
I'm a little hoarse, so sorry about that.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a long-time listener and fan. I was calling just to leave a message. I didn't realize I'd actually get on the air. I've been listening since 96, since I was a little guy. And I actually just found the retro version of your old show, which has been amazing to listen to.
Which old
All
show?
All the 90s show. Well, Loveline.
Loveline.
From the 90s.
Okay.
Retro.
Thank
like
you.
That guy who put them all back on, it's been amazing to listen to.
Thanks, Matt. You have a question?
Yes. So I'm starting a new company, and one of our strategies is to use SEO and really connect with our audience.
What's that
we're going
search
after
engine
with podcasts.
Optimization. Mm-hmm. Search engine optimization. Mm-hmm. Make sure your results come up first in Google.
Uh-huh.
That kind
yes.
of thing.
I mean, Adam, I'm sure you're the people you bring on are masters because of what you've done these days and back then. But anyway, I saw your podcast. So one of the ways we want to connect with audiences whom we specifically want to get is through podcasts. And we're actually going to have me do interviews with famous people and then on camera and then turn them into podcasts and blog posts and Facebook and everything.
Who are you going to do an interview with?
Well, what we want to do, our platform is connecting career coaches and life coaches with people who want to hire them. It's a really big industry, and our platform will bring them together. And so we want to connect with a lot of people who
Hold
want
on.
To do this.
You wanted to leave a message on my machine?
My message? Well, here's my request is that your podcast class that you're doing in L.A., come to D.C. It's funny you said that. That's all I wanted to say, but I thought I'd give you a little background. I mean, I didn't really expect to talk to you. I just was going to ask the people. I'd leave a voicemail
all right.
for you saying, hey, come
all right,
to D.C.
Do it. I'll let you do it. You ready?
By the way, thank you for your joke on Jamie Raskin and his hair. That was hilarious.
Oh, he's an
the heckler.
Oh,
he's a local representative.
Oh, right. Well, his hair is
Congress.
Beyond repair. I don't want to sound like Nipsey Russell, but his hair is beyond repair.
I can't believe it's not more common joke.
Jamie Raskin, pull up a picture of him. That would be, if you're a ring announcer, when you were talking, if you're bringing him in, you'd go, 31-3, 10 by way of knockout, the man whose hair is beyond repair, Jamie Raskin! All right. Sorry, Matt. Yes.
Doesn't he sound just like Crispin Glover? The guy we've been talking to the whole time?
Yeah, sort of. But like he's sucking off an ether sock and talking about putting lotion in the basket. Maz Jobrani, everybody. Oh.
Hey.
There's Jamie Raskin.
Oh.
Two hairstyles.
It's one thing to have a comb over, but it's another thing to have a Jew frome over. Like, he's got a Jew frome over.
Greg Proops looks terrible.
It's like a Brillo pad that's just gone bad.
The back part is wide open. He's got the front. And look, we got two beautiful bald men sitting in our studio.
Well, thank you.
Right now. Like, I get it. If it's the 70s and you're David Crosby and you have to have a ponytail because it's rock and roll and it's 1974, then it's just you're going to try to make do with what you got. But ever since Michael Jordan cleared the way, like, why wouldn't you?
And Maz kind of tripped onto something else that he could walk in with, the Brillo pad that's gone bad.
There you go.
That was really good, Maz.
Yeah, I'm here for the assist.
Maz, so now with your hair, as I was watching, well, it's weird. Like, I watched John Jones fight over the weekend. He's not bald, but he is bald for the fight, but he doesn't have to be bald. He's got hair.
No, I don't. No, when I choose to have hair, it grows around the side and not much on top. I look like a Jewish jeweler.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, it's got kind of a friar look.
Yeah.
And so when that happens, why not just remove it all?
That's exactly what happened. There was a point there where I was like, I'm not going to do this. And like exactly, Michael Jordan actually was a big reason why we were able to do this. And if somebody...
We being the bald brotherhood.
Brotherhood.
That's right.
And we were just, if somebody had a problem with us, I'd be like, talk to Jordan.
Who's on your bald Mount Rushmore? Who do you put on there? Jordan. I got Jordan in there personally.
He made
it cool.
Yeah, but I got to go. The original gangster, Yul Brynner.
I got Yul Brynner too.
Yul Brynner's got to be up in there.
The best part about Yul Brynner is, and I have a hard time putting guys on there who shave the head. Like, the natural bald is kind of the way to go. But Yul shaved his head, I believe, for The King and I, and he liked the look so much. Like, this is my look for now.
I'm
shaving this forever.
Wait,
and he did.
He could have grown hair?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's the legend. I have not seen Yul with,
that just upset me.
No, he shaved his head for the role. He had a head of hair, and then
I thought he was like us, balding. And like, how about Telly Savalas? Because he'd be on there too.
I got Telly a peg below Yul.
Yeah?
Yeah. I got Jason Statham up there because he's an ass kicker who went bald naturally and never, you know, he's just like balding. Is like, oh no, I'm still kicking ass. I'm losing my hair.
You got
to
go. I mean, he's good, but he's sort of modern bald. You know, a lot of folks paved the bald way before him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go a little bit ethnic because I don't like this being populated by people with privilege. Gary, where are you going? You got to look up Otis Sistrunk, man.
Who?
Otis Sistrunk.
Who? Who's Otis Sistrunk?
Who's
Otis Sistrunk?
This sounds like the intro to a terrible song.
And by the way,
find a good picture.
By the way, side
take
note,
your time.
When you said you're going ethnic, I came Mahatma Gandhi.
The
ultimate ethnic.
That's like the saint of baldhood.
Saint, that's right. Otis Sistrunk surpasses Mahatma Gandhi.
I don't know. When you guys see Otis Sistrunk, especially he's an NFL player. He's a Oakland Raiders.
But what sets him above all the other football players? And you know what I mean?
I'm sorry. The only context I have here is bald. What qualifies as a good picture?
You tell me. Find a good picture of Otis Sist. I don't know. Not grainy. Not pixelated. Not black and white.
Oh yeah.
There's
a badass bald man.
There's famous footage of Otis with his like head just steaming, pouring off his head. Why I like Otis is I'm trying to work a little color into this. Number one. Number two. It's one thing to be bald now. To be bald and living in Oakland in 1973.
Wow. Afros everywhere. Yeah. Huge. Duck out of the way on the streets.
Huge. Like when you saw the guys that were attending, you know, Frazier Ali 2 or something like that. Like huge, huge. And then he's bald. He was a bald brother back. Yeah. I mean, he probably played 68 to 77 or something like
sweet
that.
Sweet hair time.
Was he like was he with Jack Tatum and those guys? Probably. That was those days, right?
They Call Me Assassin. That was the name of his book. Yeah, he was probably got there. Max Bader, off the top of your head, when did Otis Sistrunk, when did he graduate college, and when was he drafted?
Not Otis
Sistrunk. No, the years. I would bet that he beat Tatum there by a couple of years, but they were probably played together. All right, let's talk about
72 is when he entered the NFL.
And, again, prime Afro time. And, when did Tatum enter? Let's figure that out.
I wonder if Michael Jordan would bring up Otis Sistrum as
his. Who are his
influences?
Sistrunk.
Sistrunk as his. Maybe that was what prompted him.
Yeah. There's also a great line, like, it was like after a Monday Night Football game or something, and like they're interviewing him walking off the field with this big steamy head, and he said, "That was a hard fought battle out there, Otis." And he went, "It was a mother." He like walked away. Like he was as black as a black man came. Like I'm from North Hollywood, you know. When he saw Otis Sistrunk with that bald head and steam pouring off it, like that's
a man.
That's a man.
That's like Mr. T when they go, "What's your prediction for this fight?"
Pain. Yeah.
Tatum got there a year earlier and stayed a few years later.
There you go.
Oh, he was there. So I played with Jack. Immigrant, name of the new special available now on Netflix, and the show Superior Donuts. We'll talk about both these things in a minute. I think we'll play a little clip from the Netflix special available as we speak. You got it queued up there? And then you got to find Otis with his steamy head on the sideline as well.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you. Now, I know some of you might have voted for him. I know that some immigrants actually voted for Trump because they wanted fewer taxes, but they ended up with fewer relatives. Yeah, that happens. Be honest with you, listen, when the whole Muslim ban thing, people were saying Muslim ban, they asked me, "Are you afraid of Muslim ban?" I go, "I'm not afraid personally of the Muslim ban, because the honest truth is, I'm really not that religious, okay? I'm not that religious. Like, I was born in Iran, but I'm not really religious, okay? Like, I'm not really Muslim, I'm more like Muslim-ish. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is how Muslim I am. Like, I could play a Muslim in a movie, you'd go see it, you'd believe it. Right? You go to a movie, you see me on the screen, "Allahu Akbar!" Like, "Oh, he's good, look at that, wow. Oh, he speaks the language. Wow. He's fluent in Muslimish. Wow. But the honest truth is, I'm not that religious. Like, if I were really Muslim, I would have to fast during Ramadan. I don't fast during Ramadan. I couldn't drink alcohol. I drink alcohol. I would have to pray 5 times a day. I don't pray. The only time I pray is if I'm almost in an accident. And then I just go, "Oh, Jesus." Yeah. It's the wrong God. It's the wrong God. No, I just say, oh, Jesus, because it's faster. Oh, Jesus, it's fast. Yeah, oh, Muhammad. Takes too long.
Immigrants, name of the new special, available on Netflix. I got questions about praying.
Yeah. I probably don't have answers, but go for it.
Well, I was thinking to myself, you know, there are forms of exercise you can kind of do in your car, and then there's going to the gym. Yeah. And we can all agree that, well, if it's just about doing something in the car, I guess I'm stuck in traffic, I can do it.
Yeah.
Putting down the mat, facing Mecca, and getting down on the knees, that you can't do while you're brushing your teeth or while you're in the shower. But I feel like there's forms of prayer, maybe the Jews do this one, where you can like prayer and make, you can pray and make an omelet.
Sure.
And if I could do that, I might be down with it. Like, right, I could watch SportsCenter and pray, but putting down the beach towel and facing Mecca, that's, that I can't, I cannot multitask. Oh, we had a good picture. Sorry, Gary.
You'd have to pull over.
Otis.
Oh, yeah.
Sis drunk.
Oh, forget it.
That's hot.
That's a dude.
Yeah.
All right, sorry.
I've had to wait for a parking space because two gentlemen got prayer mats out in the Hollywood and Highland complex and put them next to their car and prayed. And I said, no, I'll wait.
You would think nowadays with all the technology, there'd be like a prayer app.
Yeah.
Right, it acts like the rug. Mm. Just put it next to you, you sit in the car, and be like, it's there.
Can we use a yoga mat because it's easier on one's knees if you're out in the parking lot at Hollywood and Highland?
I'm going with yes on that. Especially if you've got a rug design on the yoga mat.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's got to be out there, the Muslim yoga mat.
Yeah, somebody had to have thought of that.
Yeah, because what makes it a prayer mat? Like, is it need to be some material, some fabric, some length, some width, blessed by a, you know, like kosher.
Imam.
Well, like kosher is kosher because it's blessed by a rabbi.
Yeah,
we'll figure that one out, Gary. We need to know what a prayer.
I don't know if they always have the mats, because I know I've been in hotels in the Middle East, and they'll have a little thing on the table which shows you which direction Mecca is. Yeah. But I don't think everyone's checking in with a rug. I'm pretty sure they're not.
I always turn the table around and face it toward Vegas. That's my move.
Well, yeah.
Where's Laughlin from here? Yeah. I just face it that way, and I just pivot it around.
Yeah, sure.
Nobody knows the
difference. Well, from LA, that's east. That's east. So you're praying in the right direction, Adam.
So they have the arrows when you go to the – how often you get back to the Middle East?
Well, I started going in 2007 to do stand-up. We started going there when I was doing the Axis of Evil comedy tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I'd gone to their – you know, to hotels all over the Middle East. And even on the airplane, sometimes if it's a Middle Eastern airplane, you'll see some people praying. Not everybody doesn't get up at the same time. You just see once in a while somebody doing it. And so I've gone back several times. I mean, now there's a whole comedy scene. Like, they get – once in a while, they'll book some people, and I'm like, how is this guy performing there clean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had Eddie Griffin in Dubai. I'm like, how did he – because I know Eddie Griffin.
Sure.
He's a funny guy, but is not clean.
No.
So I have no idea how that goes over. Or like Chris Tucker. I have no idea. But then they, you know what it is? I think that there's a level of stardom that they like.
Right.
Where they're like, oh, he can cuss.
Well, that's him doing a sort of a private, corporate-y kind of gig, right?
No, it's public. You see the advertising. I've been in Dubai to do a show for myself, and I'm driving, and there's this huge billboard. It's like, Chris Tucker, October 5th. And I'm like, have they seen the act?
Do they know?
I mean, he's funny. I'm not kidding. I'm not saying he's not funny. I'm just saying in a place where maybe it's become more liberal in a little way, because when we first went there, it was the first time there was a group of American comedians that went to the Middle East to perform, and they would tell us, a lot of the places, they'd say whatever you want, but no sex, no religion, no politics. You'd be like, oh, great.
Good What's show. That? Have a good show.
Yeah, hello and good night. You know, But I realized quickly that one of the reasons they didn't want sex was because they want to keep it like a lot. It's an event, so families come out. So you look out there and there's kids and their parents and all that stuff. So they don't want you know, doing, I don't know, masturbation jokes or whatever it is. So I understood that. But then again, like I said, some of the comedians that I've seen go out there, you know, every other word is MF or whatever it is, and I just don't know how they cleaned up. Actually, I heard when I went to Saudi Arabia, they were telling me that Eddie Griffin, when he went, he did like 45 minutes of clean, and then towards the end, he was like, you know, they told me I got to stay clean. And the way it was set up in Saudi Arabia, because I did that same show, it was a public show, I did the same public show a little while later. So on one end, on one half of the room, it's all guys. And on the other half of the room, it's all families.
Mm-hmm.
So supposedly, and the guys want dirty jokes. and the families don't want you to talk about any of that stuff. So supposedly when Eddie Griffin was like, you know, I got 15 more minutes. Should I stay clean? That whole guys were like, no, go for it. So he just started going like, yeah, mother. And he just started going off.
Well, this is good. And maybe I've, you know, there's little sort of yardsticks you can kind of measure societies by. But I feel like bringing comedy, appreciating comedy, not bringing comedy like I'm going to heal you with laughter, more the other way around, which is your culture and society appreciating and putting. I mean, when you get to a certain, you have to get to a certain place in terms of your society to seek out comedy, appreciate comedy, pay for comedy, and invest time in comedy.
Yeah.
We are doing pretty good here in the United States because we've been at this for a long time. And, you know, you can, if you're really good at comedy, you can get really rich. I don't know that there are many other cultures where that's true, or it came certainly in the past. It wasn't true. But I think we can all agree that the more, if you were just going to try to pick a yardstick, you know, they say, well, you can judge a culture by how they treat their prisoners. You know, well, you can sort of also judge where they're at by how they appreciate comedy and what their feeling is towards comedy. I mean, here, you know, these guys are rock stars. I mean, the big comedians are the biggest, most highly paid, you know, Chris Rock. These are the biggest, most highly paid, like most respected, whatever. And in our culture.
Yeah, the Forbes list just came out. Every year they have a Forbes list of top money-making comedians. You're absolutely right. Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld, they were all on it.
Seinfeld reclaimed number one.
50 million. You're absolutely right.
Right. Now, so if you show me a culture that takes that, does that with comedians, and I'll show your culture, I think, is fairly civil, fairly safe, doesn't do a lot of ethnic cleansing or, you know, terrorizing of women or, you know, brutalizing of other groups that disagree with them. Or, I mean, obviously, you're dealing with tolerance. So you're going to have, you're going to let the Jewish guy or the black guy get up there and say their piece. A lot of it's going to be, you're going to be, as the white guy, you'll be the butt of the joke. And then you'll give them $50 million and they'll go the next
game. It takes a certain level of security, a sense of security in oneself and in one's government. For example, you know, we always have the Correspondents' Dinner. Now, this year, Trump didn't go, but still, regardless, we have a culture where the president shows up and you roast the president.
Right.
Whereas in a lot of these other countries, when we got there, they said, you can do political material about other countries, but don't talk about our leader, because that leader is not secure enough in his leadership to be able to take a joke. And you're absolutely right. Now, what's been interesting is, like, for example, Egypt's an interesting one, because Egypt has a rich history of comedic actors and, you know, like just slapsticky stuff. But the stand-up comedy, I think, is something that is newer to the Middle East, including Egypt. And that's where you go on stage and talk about not just your own problems, but then political problems. Mm-hmm. That's where you start – that's where you can start gauging the level of freedom in a society. For example, there was a guy – his name's Bassem Youssef. After the 2011 the Green Movement in – not the Green Movement.
The
Arab Spring in Egypt – he was this doctor who went down to the protest and was helping out, and he looked around and he was like, this is crazy. So he started doing a show out of his own garage, making fun of the leaders, and eventually it caught on fire. I mean, it did well. Caught on fire, bad term. It did well, and he became known as the John Stewart of Egypt.
Saw the movie Patch Ansari.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy became big. he became big in Egypt. And he had, like, I don't know, millions and millions of viewers. But then the leadership changed a couple of times after that. So the latest round of the leadership, which was a military leadership, they basically kicked him. They threatened him, and he had to flee the country. So it goes like that.
It's a great yardstick if you're just looking for sort of like I always just go – I always look for these, like, little indicators. Like I always say – soon as Los Angeles started putting barbed wire around the freeway signs, someone needed to stop and go, what's going on?
Right.
Well, something's gone wrong here. Yeah. We need to stop and, like, shift direction or figure out why we're doing this. Not like, hey, more barbed wire. It's like, wait, stop. I've always said, and I'll include it with the comedy, a society, how they treat their women is a great yardstick as well, because it's essentially like, my buddy Ray was held back a grade, and he was 200 pounds of muscle when he was in the ninth grade and had the bench press record at my junior high. It was Ray's way or the highway for everything all the time. And the reason why was simple. He had 80 pounds of muscle on the rest of us. So whatever he wanted to do is what he did, and whatever you want to do was what you weren't going to do. We're going to do what Ray wanted to do because he was bigger than you. Now, I live with my wife, and I weigh 70 pounds more than her. So you'd think, well, it'd stand to reason that we get to just do sure. whatever I want to do because I got 70 pounds yeah. on her, and she's going to have to listen to me. But we're evolved, and we don't, and we're also in a no-fault state, and we don't we don't do that.
She got a big mouth.
We we let her, you know, pick a movie, and then I pick a movie, and we go back and forth. And that's sort of evolved. We're pretty good about that yeah. here in the United States. And if you think about a lot of the countries that don't treat their women well, you go, oh, well, those guys don't like women. And you go, no, they like getting their way.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as if you're roommates with Ray, you're not going to get your way because he's stronger than you. So it takes a pretty evolved roommate to go, all right, we watched the show I wanted to watch on our only TV last night. Even though I could crush you, you may now watch because it's only fair. So it's not that they don't like women and we love women or vice versa. It's just like we're evolved to understand this person needs a turn, right. even if you outweigh them by 100 pounds. And that's an evolvement.
Yeah, I would also say that some of these countries, that's the thing about, obviously we're in America, so we know more about what's going on here, and that's what we're taught. But some of the countries that we think might not have as assertive women, they actually do. Going back to the Green Movement, which was the Iranian election in 2009, when there was accusations of voter fraud, and there was like millions of people protesting in the streets. One of my favorite things to see, it was on CNN every day, they would show the women that were protesting, and there was all these beautiful Iranian like women that were at the forefront. And I kept saying, I was like, this is, if there's going to be change in the future in Iran, it's going to be led by women pushing for their rights. Because ultimately, if you run a government like the Taliban did, when they show up and they basically announce on the radio in Afghanistan years ago, they go, women, stay home. Children, girls, stop going to school. If you run that, you're getting rid of half of your workforce. I mean, it's totally ludicrous. And I totally agree with you. I think that understanding the value that women have, some of these other cultures need to realize that, wait a minute, we're shooting ourselves in the foot because of some thing that we read in the Quran or whatever it is from years ago that women should just stay home and have kids.
Well, I think it's appreciating women and appreciating comedy and satire. If you take those two things and they run pretty strong in a culture, I'm going to show you a culture I can probably hang out with a little bit. Stifle that thought for 1 second there, Betty. The men are talking.
You're absolutely right.
You can ask about daffodils or rainbows or powder puffs or marshmallows or whatever kind of softball question you're going to toss. But you wait for the men to finish speaking. Sweetie, could you freshen up my coffee? I got to do a quick read for Onnit over here. You've heard me talk about Onnit before. Amazing supplements like Alpha Brain, the Buffalo Meat Warrior Bars, the MCT oil. It's all good. I had it. I did not have the Warrior Bar today. I had an Alpha Brain. I took a shot off the MCT oil bottle. I like that. Onnit CEO Aubrey Marcus came in here. He did take a knee. We talked about going from a college athlete to running a multi-million-dollar health brand and when to abandon your dreams. We'll play a little clip of that right now. What I'm trying to say to people, because we always do this, hey, you got to follow those dreams and you got to hang on to them. You got to shoot for the stars. You got to hang on to those dreams. Like I'm saying, no, you don't abandon those things. Just like you did in basketball, just like I did, believe it or not, in football, just like so many other, just like my son will do one day, he will abandon his dreams.
Oh, he doesn't get to talk?
Okay. Well, he was sitting there.
He was nodding.
He was nodding feverishly. All right. Anyway, they filmed the whole thing. You can watch the entire podcast and behind the scenes mini doc free at onnit.com/Adam. And while you're there, save 10% off your entire order. Again, you can watch a Take a Knee episode for free. He does speak, I promise you, at onnit.com/Adam. That's onnit.com/Adam. All right, let's do a little news. Maz, hang out, crack wise. Yes. Eugene will knock out some news.
Get the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Eat news with Gina, Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So just to pull the curtain back a little bit, this is being taped on a Monday just because we have some breaking news. And by the time you hear this, we'll probably have a little more information. Anthony Scaramucci is out as White House Communications Director.
He was off to such a great start.
He really was going so well. That this is according to CNN. It's the latest high-profile departure from the White House, the Trump White House. Chief of Staff Reince Priebus resigned at the end of last week, replaced by John Kelly, whose first day was Monday. A White House official said Kelly wanted Scaramucci removed from his new role as the Communications Director because he did not think he was disciplined and had burned his credibility. Scaramucci, a colorful and controversial figure, was brought on during the latest in a long list of White House shakeups that have rocked the presidency with a sense of chaos. Scaramucci is the third White House communications director to leave the post that had been vacant since late May. His departure comes days after he unleashed a vulgar tirade, quote unquote, against two top White House officials in a conversation with a reporter. And I believe it was Barstool Sports said he looks like what a line of Coke would look like if it could talk.
Did he know he was being recorded when he was? Was he being filmed? Well, I was out of town.
He came out later and said that he made a mistake in trusting the reporter. But
he won't do
presumably
that again.
A communications director would have a very strong relationship with the on the record, off the record type of thing.
Yeah.
Also, Aaron Blake, who's been on the show before, retweeted something very insightful. If he didn't know they were on the record, he thought they were off the record and was saying the things off the record, that makes him a leaker.
He's going to be very hard on the leakers.
Like if you're talking to a reporter off the record and talking about Steve Bannon and blah, 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 you're a leaker. You're leaking information that's not on the record.
He does not like leakers.
When it moves
kind of, but if you're just calling a guy a douchebag.
Said he could suck his own.
Say whatever that is. You're telling details off the record.
I don't want to be douchey, but leaking information versus like, I went to this guy's house. He served food off the record. He's not a good cook.
No, but he said a couple of things in there.
I mean,
I see what you're saying.
But if there's some good stuff in there, then it is leaking.
Yeah, I think he said, because the irony being that he called the guy to find out who leaked the dinner that Sean Hannity was at with Trump and him. And then you're right. I think somewhere in there he mentioned something about, if I'm not mistaken, he mentioned something about Priebus is on the way out or something. He kind of.
Oh, well, then he's a leaker.
Yeah. So.
A leaky.
Not anymore, though, right?
Yep. No, he's out. He was fun, though. And I think his wife's divorcing him, too. So he has a lot going on right now.
Oh. Had a bad week.
Yeah. Poor Mooch.
He had a
poor
great week and a bad week. All the way. He had a kid. Yeah. Do you have a baby?
Yeah.
What was your best week?
It's kind of funny that his wife cited the work with the Trump presidency. So he spent 10 days in this job and got a divorce.
Yes. And I believe he was not present for the delivery of the baby. He texted his wife, congratulations. I'll pray for
this. This is not a good person.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm willing to judge on this.
You're
one.
Gonna put it,
I'm
going to
weigh
it
in.
There? Okay.
This is not a good man.
Yeah. He had a hedge fund or something. How many good hedge fund managers do you? I don't know any.
No.
The Mooch. Yeah. And then when he went, he said, there's an old Italian saying, the fish stinks from the head down, and the only two who don't stink are me and the president.
Really?
Yeah.
And why? I feel like the fish guts would smell.
Yeah. The
first.
Fish head maybe smell the least.
I wonder.
That's
if,
my feeling.
If enough people quit, does Trump just run the whole thing himself? Is it like a ma and pa kind of?
He's stuffing envelopes. He's washing windows. He's mowing the lawn.
His shirt sleeves pulled up.
Hey, welcome to Donnie's.
He's got an old cash register. The ting ting. You know, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It becomes like. Remember every one of those old like. Movies you'd watch where the guy'd get a speeding ticket going through town and the sheriff would be pulling him in and go, I want to talk to the judge. I go, hold on. And then the guy'd come out with the judge hat on and goes, I'm the judge too. Swapping hats.
Yep.
It'd be funny. I could just put communications director on his hat.
And that's great.
Trump White House. I'm telling you.
It's fun. Well, this is also breaking as we record the show. Los Angeles has reached an agreement with Olympic leaders on terms that will pave the way for hosting the Summer Games in 2028 instead of 2024. This is according to, I believe, the LA Times. The deal will bring the Olympics back to Southern California for a third time after Los Angeles hosted the Games in 1984 and in 1932.
Would they be the first three
The three-peat?
The first three-city?
I'm not sure. Well,
I'm going to go with yes.
I think so.
It also opens the door for Paris to host the Games in 7 years from now. So that was kind of the – it was neck and neck there.
I was going to say it's going to be a lot of congestion. You're going to have to deal with a lot of building. You have to deal with a lot of snafus and traffic and stuff. And then I realized – oh, we're all just going to be living in Austin, Texas.
There'll be no one here.
Plus,
we're all going to follow Toyota.
This is 2028.
10 years from now, no one I know will be here. Every human being is either like moved to Austin, moved to Portland, moved to Seattle, or said, the kids are 14 now. They're graduating. So we should be packing up about the time. Like everyone I know is just like, well, we're getting the hell out of here.
And I wonder if the metro will be built by then.
No.
Probably not.
Not likely. Or we all just fall into the bay after the big one.
We will join London as the second city to host three Olympics.
There it is.
Right. I wonder if Kim Jong-un heard that and he's like, you know, not if I can, you know, bomb them before.
Oh, that's right.
There's challenge another accepted.
Reason. Well,
yeah. That's another reason. Right.
Well, as everyone pretty much well knows now, Adam, very, very busy weekend for you last weekend. One of the reasons being you flew to D.C. to testify before Congress about free speech and safe spaces on college campuses. You spoke about heckling. You spoke about white privilege, everything in between. But a couple of clips I thought really crystallized some of your points, if we could play
a few.
Here's the first bit from your opening remarks.
I come from a very blue-collar background. I grew up in North Hollywood, California. My dad was a school teacher, and my mom received welfare and food stamps and told me very importantly when I was young, when I asked her if she would get a job, she said, and lose my welfare benefits, no thank you, which taught me a very valuable lesson, which was never to listen to my mom. All right.
And then
it was a valuable lesson. Like,
of course.
I do hold
maybe
stand
the most.
By that.
Yeah.
Adam talks about the problem with wait. Now, we discussed this on a previous show, but it bears repeating. Problem with people waiting until college to address certain issues about the kids.
There's something I would like to touch on very quickly, which is going through diversity training, going to college. We're all sitting here, first off, under the assumption that 100% of kids go to college. I didn't know anyone who went to college, so I had to figure out a way to be a decent human being, not to be racist, not to be filled with hate, to be tolerant, minus college. I think that starts at home. So if you get to 18 or 19, I believe the cement on the sidewalk of your brain has already dried, and good luck carving your initials into it with diversity training. If you're a bad kid and we get hold of you in college, you're probably just going to be a bad adult. You need to learn to be a good human being from zero to college instead of us all converting you once you get to college. And especially since more than half the people don't end up in college. So we're sitting here with a grand plan of how to coach everyone up once they get to college. What if they never get to college? What about their parents and what kind of job are they doing coaching the kids up so that they need no coaching whether they go to college or not?
Whoever tied that tie did a hell of a job.
That was Mike August.
That's the takeaway.
Well, see, the world these people live in is we will have some woman wearing huge amber beads who looks like Eartha Kitt explain to you what you should feel about people from other lands when you're 19. And then once you sit down with 18 other people and her for 2 hours, then you're done.
Yep. It's like, all is right.
I don't think that's how it works. I think you got to learn that stuff from your parents pretty early and pretty often. And if we need her to explain it to you, and they said to me at a certain point, like, well, what's your take on diversity training? I'm like, I don't think it works. I don't think it should be mandatory. It seems like a waste of time to me. And they're like, I said, look, sexual harassment seminars started 20 years ago. Has sexual harassment claims gone away, or have they gone up 20-fold? And if they've gone up 20-fold, then maybe it's not working.
Yeah.
It's such a pompous thought that, here, you need us. We'll catch you at 19. I don't know many people that are different at 19. I mean, who change appreciably
at
19.
You can make adjustments, but yeah, you're
kind of who you are. If you think being a racist is a good plan, you're not going to get talked out of it. When Florida from Good Times comes and discusses how you should feel toward people who look different than you. Their notion is this is going to solve everything. Well, first off, we've been going at it for a while. I don't feel like it's solved anything.
Well, and there was a diversity trainer on the, not on the panel, but on the other side, in the white suit. I can't remember.
Well, they have a big problem. Well, they look at things this way, and I'll screw up the names in the place or whatever. But one of the things they kept trotting out was there's a young black woman. She's a lacrosse star, I guess, and she became the president of American University, the first black woman to be voted in as the student body president of American University. Then some guy took a banana and like put a noose around it and wrote the black sorority letters on it and hung it from a tree or somewhere or something. And that's all they did was talk about that, which means some racist and possibly sometimes these guys are just sort of drunken idiots. It's not always. Well, there's three boxes. It's not always racist. Sometimes it's person of the same persuasion agitating, just trying to stir it up. I'm not one of these alarmists. It's like, oh, that's self-inflicted wound. But oftentimes when they look into this, it turns out somebody's just agitating from the same side. So we talk about it, but, or it's racist, or it's just drunken dude making bad decision, which is what a lot of 19-year-old drunken dudes do. They make a lot of stupid decisions. They make a lot of stupid jokes. But either way, one person, or more than one person, but less than 10 or 5, made that decision. An entire student body voted in a black woman when, at the university, I think 6.2% of the population of the university, of the students, are black. So when you have 6% voting in, or the minority at 6%, having 94% coming from other groups, I think it was like 55% white, voting in a black woman to run the student body, that's a good story. They never talked about that. They only talked about this. One is a student body of thousands of people voting this black woman into this position. The other's one idiot. Or racist idiot, or drunken racist idiot, doing this. That's all they're interested in. And if that's all you're interested in, you'll never solve this problem, because there's always going to be that
can't.
What's their solution?
They don't have a solution.
Seminars?
The solution is them. They don't really say it, but it's like, you come talk to us and we'll come up with something.
Well, really the solution is, like, first of all, you made a good point about the parenting. I talk to my wife about that all the time, and that we have our kids in private school. And I tell her, I go, listen, I think a 90-some-odd percent is, first of all, is genetics. Your kid's either a jerk or he's not. Wow. Then there's the parent. Then there's the school, in my opinion, right? So
right.
Now the there's another thing that can happen. If the parents are, let's say, super racist, the kids sometimes don't go that way. They realize what jerks their parents are, and they grow up to hate their parents or be like, my dad's Archie, whatever it is.
That's what I'm doing with my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. But I think the best thing to do, and I think we do that all automatically, which is what you were just saying, is integration, right? So if you go to a college, and maybe I've grown up somewhere where I've never seen it, you know, had any black people in my life, and suddenly I'm in college and I'm in classes with black people and we're having discussions on the subjects and the color no longer matters, that's a great way, obviously, than a seminar. Or another thing that I've been a big proponent of is I really think that people should study abroad. I got a chance to go to Italy for a year in college. It was the best year of my life because it opened my eyes to this wider perspective, and you realize, oh wow, people are just trying to live their lives everywhere.
Yeah. It's also sort of moot because my son, before you look at it this way, it's going to take care of itself. Women aren't racist. They think that way, but they're not active. Mm-hmm. You know, when things
not
about
like us.
No one thinks about the Chick Klan. Write that down. That's a good movie. I'll watch that. No, but they don't.
Klux Klan.
Yeah, but well, pink sheets rolling around. Right. So you think about racists. You don't think about women. You think about men. Okay. My son, most young boys, my son, all his friends, he's 11, sports fanatic, loves basketball, can name everybody on the Golden State Warriors, can name everyone in the league. He just can. And if you ask him, like, who his heroes are, he's, I want those LeBron shoes, those Steph Curry shoes, or whatever. He's worshiping black men growing up, like, without the exposure without, I don't have to take him to the whatever. He watches and is his heroes.
Sure.
If you ask him who his heroes, if he said, give me five guys you look up to, five guys you worship, five guys you'd like to turn out like, five guys you'd like to have a root beer with, a knock around guy to have a root beer with, he would probably name five black athletes.
So you're complaining there's no Larry Bird now. That's what you're saying.
There is Larry Bird.
Where have you gone?
I can't crack the top 10. So I'm not going to even be the sixth man on his starting rotation of who he would like to hang out with.
You're the end of the bench. Giving high fives.
Every single one of his lily white male buddies who he hangs out with is going to have a difficult time being a racist while worshiping LeBron James simultaneously.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let me
tell
you.
You don't need a seminar. You need basketball.
You need basketball. Right. That's right. Now they're taking over mixed martial arts. That's it. That's it. We're done, people. Yep. Considering college? Well, whether you're attending for the first time or going back to complete your degree, there's three common financial aid mistakes you can avoid. Discover them and Southern New Hampshire University by texting MOVE to 55-44-33. That seems pretty easy. MOVE to 55-44-33. SNHU's mission, make higher education accessible and affordable. They're devoted to learning, not profit. God, when you hear about these tuitions at a lot of these schools, it is insane. Tuitions are skyrocketing across the country. SNHU hasn't raised online tuition in years. So learn about SNHU's. Plus, top three financial aid mistakes and how to avoid them by texting MOVE to 554433. That's MOVE to 554433. Yeah, I talked to these. God, who was I talking to? It's like,
Congress.
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking to Nate. Nate was the, Nate Adams would make the movies with. He's saying, his wife graduated. They just got done paying off her loans. Like, it was like $1,200 a month. But she's not ahead of any of us. She's just trying to get jobs or working with. Like, this, I don't even know what college is going to be for in a few years from now.
I'm not done paying off my college loans.
Really?
No, neither are Chris or I.
Yeah,
it's insane,
and it's so easy because you're in it, and they make it like okay, you just sign here, you're going to get the loan, you do it. I actually dropped out of grad school, and I had taken out a loan back then. This was '94 or something for $8,000, and then it was just $8,000. That's nothing, right? So I was dropping out like after the first quarter, and I go, I'm not going to give back the rest. I've got plans for this $8,000.
Sure,
and I swear to God, this is how I thought. They gave me a student ID card. This was at UCLA. You had a student ID card that got you $2 off a movie in Westwood. So I was like, if I just see 4,000 movies,
pays for itself.
I'm breaking even. So I took the $8,000. I took the eight grand.
And what's the interest on that now?
I paid it off.
Oh,
I got
good.
Rid of it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the interest is insane. It's so weird that the place that you're going to, it's sort of weird. It's like schools and hospitals. They'll prey on you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll hit you hard with the interest and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's weird because it's not predatory check cashing places or loan, pawn shops or any of that. It seems so, it's cool. Yep. It's cool. They don't want anything for me. I know. The IRS is that way too. If you owe them money, they just keep hitting you with fines and whatever. And it never, I owe them $5,000. I paid them like, I said, what's the minimum amount I can pay you? They're like $29 a month. I said, I'll do it. For like 3 years, I paid them $29 a month. And then I finally started making some money. And I'm like, all right, now I want to settle up. What do I owe you? And like $5,000.
Yeah.
Like, so I just pay the, that's just all that is interest and penalties. Like,
yeah.
So you can pay the government like this stipend for the rest of your life.
That's
and they're
just
cool
keeping
with
the
it.
Kneecap breakers away.
Yeah.
Right. But they would shut. If I opened a credit card that did that, they'd go, no, you can't do that. It's not fair to people.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one more.
All right. Well, I might need your help with this, Adam, because, I know you're not a big vintage guy, but you still might need to help. Former AC/DC singer Brian Johnson had a close call Saturday when he lost control of his vintage Austin A35 race car. Any idea what that looks like? Oh, here we have a picture right here.
Ooh. Yeah,
pretty,
that's a little
gnarly.
Car. Yeah.
During the qualifying round for the Celebrity Challenge Trophy Race at the Silverstone Classic in England, Johnson came away unhurt despite rolling the car over, the windshield flying off, and the door opening. The wreck meant he was unable to start the official race, which was included 30 drivers in Classic Austin A30s and A35s facing off on a 3.5-mile Grand Prix circuit course for charity. So in this particular one, celebrities were split into five teams. Each was mentored by a well-known race driver. Those who qualified had the opportunity to compete for a charity prize, which proceeds went to Prostate Cancer UK. The Silverstone Classic has been called the world's...
He got a stick shift up his ass to show he was down with the cause. If I'm willing to do this, certainly a well-lubed forefinger.
Helps.
Cannot
nope,
be.
Yeah,
apparently this is the biggest classic car racing festival in the world, but he walked away unscathed and that thing rolled.
The Silverstone.
Yeah.
Now we got to figure out, is it bigger than the Goodwood festivals? Not the Good. Well, Gary's got to look it up.
That's
I feel the driveway one, right? I feel like the Goodwood. So vintage racing is getting big, and the cars are getting expensive, and the crowds are getting big. Like they, when I started doing, so Laguna Seca, the Rolex Historics, the biggest one in the States is coming up. They're going to get over 70,000 spectators at this thing over a couple days coming up in the middle of August, and 500 plus cars participating in it. It's still weird. I guess everything's kind of, I don't know, it's the Burning Man or whatever. Everything, every dog has its day, but the whole vintage racing thing is turning into its own sport, and it's getting bigger all the time. You can tell anything, you know, everyone always wants to talk about like sort of record sales or head counts or numbers, demographics. All you need to know is that when I started racing at Laguna Seca, you drive past the bleachers and they were smattering of people in there. And I went to go watch a race, not one that I wasn't in last year, and I was having trouble finding a seat in the same bleachers. Now, you can talk about how many tickets were sold and everything. I just tell you, it's crowded there now. I don't know what it is, but the whole vintage racing thing is getting popular.
Are they all fast cars, or do they have any like Laurel Hardy cars that are
who breaks 25 miles an hour?
You know,
they have so like coming up in at Monterey, Laguna Seca, they'll have probably 13 classes. And they'll have some of that like chitty chitty bang bang stuff, and then that'll go up to like modern day, like I don't know, Gary, forget that assignment. But if you find a late '80s, early '90s GTP car, they'll have races that are 40 GTP cars from the '80s or nineties, and those will be super fast cars. So they kind of goes everywhere and everywhere in between. I think mine is
that race. I did move on as per your request, and here's your picture, but that race features over 10,000 cars over the course of the 3-day weekend is what this website says. I checked it 3 times because it seems weird to me.
But it's not racing 10,000 cars.
No, these are display cars.
If you go to the Rolex, go to Mazda, Rolex, Storix, whatever. I'm in Group 4A, so I'll tell you what group I'm in. But it's got a whole bunch of different cars. But yeah, there's like 45, 50 cars in every race. There's lots of people, tons of cars, and just somehow, I don't know why, but vintage racing has turned into a thing, and then the cars have gotten expensive too. So as it turns out, the old crappy Japanese race cars that nobody wanted when I bought them have gone up in value a lot more than the old like Ferraris and Lamborghinis stuff you picture as classic cars. The old junky race cars actually went up faster.
How many other I mentioned a lot of rich guys. How many other like names we'd recognize are at any given race? Like say this
like
upcoming
or?
One. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, driving a car.
Nobody.
Okay. I know Dempsey does a little bit of the,
he drives Porsches. And as he told me right before I was getting into my car, I said, Patrick, you got to do some vintage racing. too dangerous. I said, why don't you wait till after the race? I have to do it while I'm climbing, climbing into the car.
I'm pouring milk on myself.
Yeah, the guy races at Le Mans. He's explaining to me it's too dangerous. But I guess we can tell that to Brian Johnson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find that 4A, and I'll tell you who the group is.
Gary's you want me a the look. List of the cars competing?
I just need the name. I just need the GTU, GTO, GT. So they end up running all these kind of catch-all stuff. There'll be professional drivers that you may have heard of.
Okay.
A handful of professional guys who may be driving in someone else's car. All right. Let's say, Gary.
I'm so confused. You just said I
say the group, just for the whole run group. It'll have a name next to it. And a bunch of letters and numbers, and it'll be GTU, IMSA, run group 4A.
This doesn't list it as 4A, but the I'm on the Mazda Raceway website. Would it be FIA, IMSA, GT, GTX, AAGT?
It'd be 4A, yeah, but 4A, but that's it. Yeah, so just a whole bunch of different ones. That's what I'm saying. Bunch of letters, stuff like that. So I'll take a whole bunch of different classes and throw them in together. It's not 4A?
It very well may. I'm just, when you...
All right, go ahead and look. I'll tell you, so you guys, if you're out there, you can come say hi, because we'll be out there. ZipRecruiter. Hiring, posting jobs. One place isn't enough. You want the perfect hire, you need to post them all on the top job sites. And what do? Then you go with ZipRecruiter. Post to 200 plus job sites, including Facebook and Twitter, with one click. Find candidates in any city or any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch qualified candidates come rolling in. No juggling calls or emails to your office. Used by Fortune 100 companies and by thousands of small and medium-sized businesses all over the place as we speak. Right now, our listeners can post jobs to ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. And try it for free. All right, Gina Grad, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Disgusted with Adam.
Gina Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Yep, there it is. It doesn't have the designation on 4A, though, huh? Gary? No?
We're still looking.
Is that on the left?
Hmm?
What does that say on the left?
4A.
4A.
Yeah,
he's looking for the class of cars that are in that group, though, Brian.
It'll just say the numbers.
Shut up, us.
It'll say GTU, GT whatever, IMSA. It'll probably just be the same thing.
So many letters.
You just said. All right. Immigrant. That's the name of the very funny special, available now on Netflix. Maz Jobrani, always a delight when you come by.
Thanks for having me, man.
The Podcasting Masterclass, Irvine Improv, this Thursday, August 5th. We'll all be there. Come say hi to that. No Safe Spaces. You can check that out, nosafespaces.com. And go to iTunes, leave a nice review. And maybe Ozzy will read it on the air. Chassis, that's where you can find all the movies, chassy.com. Oh, Gary's got something.
I believe that it's IMSA, GT, GTX, AAGT.
All right. It's the thing that's weird is I can go to this website and find what it is. So, and I'm semi-retarded. All right. Can't do it. All right. You good? All right. So, anyway, chassis, chassy.com. And until next time, this is Adam from Oz and Gina and Bald saying mahalo. Yeah, there's me having sex on the internet all over the place. So what?
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Like him on Facebook and leave him a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take a Knee. You'll hear the one with the on it, dude. You get a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at adamcarolla.com. Gina Grad is on the radio weekday mornings. Hit 100.3 The Sound in Los Angeles, California. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, including the Carolla Cruise. The Podcast Masterclass this Saturday. Man, Cree events, books, movies, and more. Go to adamcarolla.com.
Hey,
Hey, listen up.
I'm Dog the Bounty Hunter.
And I'm his wife, Beth, of course.
And we're looking for trouble. My wife, Beth, and I have a brand new podcast called Dog and Beth Looking for Trouble.
Which, by the way, you are always looking for trouble.
You're
in trouble, whichever the case
is. No, I'm always getting you out of trouble. Who are we after?
Everybody.
Politicians.
Celebrities.
We're telling on all of you.
Everybody.
It's the hunt is on.
Telling it like it is.
Dog and Beth Looking for Trouble. We'll be able to talk to our fans a lot closer than we could on television.
Join us on a backseat ride-along every Tuesday starting in July.
Be sure to tune in
at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.